Welcome to the July 11th, 2018, Your Living Brand.live show. Good morning. My name is Ben Baker, and my company is Your Brand Marketing. Now, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, what do? We consult, we do workshops, and we deliver keynotes on brand, message, market, vision, and value. What does that mean? We're the storyteller of your brand. We want to understand who you are, what you do, why you do it, who you do it for, and why those people care. Because if you can get people to care about you, if you can get people to understand your value to them and how you can help them achieve their goals, they will deal with you instead of dealing with your competition. They will see value in you and they will not consider you as a commodity. You know, you won't be one of 100. You might be one of 2, or you may be one of 1. And that's where you really want to be. Because we all do something that's special. We all do something that's unique. And that's the premise of this show. This show is all about figuring out what do companies do? Why do they do it? Who do they do it for? And how do they communicate their value in a way that their customers want to engage? And every week, I interview somebody different to find out how they do that. Now, this week, I'm interviewing Dave Rendell. Dave is a professional speaker. He speaks all over the world, and he is just one of these dynamic, wonderful people that talks about how do you figure out your freak factor? How do you figure out the things that you do that, you know, might have been the weird things that you did as a kid, but be able to turn them around and make those your strengths as you grow older? And how do you turn that around to have the thought process of said, you know what, this is who I am, this is what I'm good at. Embrace it and find out how you can use those strengths to be able to support your audience. So sit back, enjoy the show, and I'll be back to say goodbye after.
Dave, thanks a lot for being on the show today. It is a pleasure seeing you here.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
You know what? It's, as we were saying off air, you know, you say you don't have a real job, but you have an incredible job. I mean, you have an amazing life that you built for yourself. I mean, you sit there all day long and you motivate people and you make people think and you give people opportunity to make their lives better. So, you know, when you say you don't have a real job, I think you have one of the best jobs out there. So for people who don't know about this show, what the show is about is how do you add value? How do you make people's lives different? How do you engage people? How do you give them that special little thing that they want to come back to you? So I'm going to let you tell your own story because, you know, there's some fascinating things that I want to get into. I want to get into Pink Goldfish. I want to get into how you started, and I want to find out where you are today and where you're going. So I'm going to turn the mic over to you and you know, tell me a little bit of a story of where you came from and where you are.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, I was always in trouble for 3 things. Mm-hmm. Couldn't sit still, couldn't be quiet, couldn't do what I was told. Those characteristics made me very unpopular with teachers. It made me very unpopular with parents. It sometimes made me very unpopular even with my peers. Mm-hmm. My story began there and having them tell me I was never going to be successful, me believing that I was never going to be successful because of those characteristics, me putting a tremendous amount of time, energy, and effort into learning to sit still, be quiet, and do what I was told. And now discovering as an adult that I get paid to stand up, not to sit down. I get paid to talk, not to be quiet. I get paid to run my own business, not to do what other people tell me to do. And that one epiphany is basically everything that I talk about, that it turned out that my biggest weaknesses were also my biggest strengths.
Right.
The worst things about me were the best things about me. My biggest disadvantages were actually advantages. And when I realized that, and started changing my path and started looking at whether that truth was also evident in other people's lives and other people's stories. And what does that mean for the way that we run our businesses, run our careers, parent our children? Once I started exploring that, it turned into the Freak Factor book. It turned into the Freak Factor presentation. It turned into the Freak Factor assessment. Mm-hmm. And that's really, I think, what gets people's attention and adds value and gets people coming back is that's the opposite of what we normally hear. We normally hear find your flaws and fix them. We do SWOT analysis on our businesses. We do personality tests on ourselves, and it gives us 48-page reports. Mm-hmm. telling us how to get better. And I stand up there and tell people that you're better than you already think you are in this very specific way, not just pumping them up. Hey, you're awesome. But this thing that you thought was wrong with you might actually be sort of your superpower. And that's a massive shift in most people's minds and has a big impact.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely huge because you're right. I mean, we're all told, stand up, you know, stand up straight. You're slouching. You don't do this. You don't do that. You don't do the other thing. Instead of focusing on the things that people do really well.
Right.
Because we all do certain things really well.
Right.
And if we focused on those things instead of focusing on the stuff that we don't do well, you know, right. And paid other people to do the things that we don't do well, me, right. Taxes, you know, that's what accountants are for, especially
right.
this time of year. You know, but I look at it and sit there and say, what are the things that we can all concentrate on that we can help people do instead of focusing on, geez, I better get better at this.
Right.
You know,
right.
there's a real mind shift there, and I love it. I mean, I got to take that freak factor test of yours. I think I'd love to see how I score.
Well, and so that's the key insight, right? There's strengths finder stuff out there. There's stuff that says build on your strengths. What I try to add to that is that we oftentimes miss our biggest strengths because they look like weaknesses, or right. We can't completely apply that build on your strengths mindset because we're so busy thinking about, yeah, but what about this part of me that's always getting me in trouble, that always seems to be a problem? Mm-hmm. And so we never really fully go after that build on what you're the best at mentality because we have these weaknesses kind of nagging at us and making us feel like something's really wrong that we have to fix. And sometimes we just miss those strengths altogether because they look like a weakness. So let's say your strength is persistence. You probably hear a lot that you're stubborn. And so instead of feeling like, wow, I'm more persistent than your average person and I need to take that to the next level, you probably think, I'm stubborn and I probably need to learn to let
things go. Back off.
Yeah, I need to back off. And that makes you worse, not better, when you see that those two things are connected.
Gotcha. So, I mean, when you're dealing with people, I mean, I'm sure, obviously, beside being on stage, you probably do workshops as well. When you're workshopping with people, where do you start? Because, you know, this is a mentality that's been ingrained in us from the time we were born.
Yeah.
And it really is. It's creating that real mind shift. And I can't see it being easy for a lot of people. And how do you break them out of their comfort zone and move them to a point where they can say, you know what, maybe this is a good thing.
Yeah. Well, it starts with that awareness piece, that assessment piece. So we start by showing them that connection between strengths and weaknesses, starting with my story, then giving them examples of other people's story. And then in a workshop, we would do the assessment and they would pick strengths. They would pick their top five strengths, their top five weaknesses. And then on the last page of the assessment, it shows them how the strength is related to the weakness, how the weakness is related to the strength. So it pairs them up. So they can see, oh yeah, people criticize me because I'm blunt and rude, but that's because I'm direct and honest. I get in trouble for being stubborn, but that's because I'm persistent. I get in trouble for being inflexible, but that's because I'm organized. People criticize me for being judgmental and negative, but that's because I'm analytical and rational. Mm-hmm. They see those connections between what they're getting criticized for, what their weaknesses seem to be, and what their strengths are. And then we build on that to talk about acceptance and appreciation, that these things have to go together. There's no way to have one without the other. And this is just the way things are in your own life and in other people's lives. And it's mostly through stories and examples, not just mine, but a lot of other ones, dyslexic billionaires. And I've got a guy with no arms who set the world record for the longest, most accurate shot in archery. And
wow.
People with autism that are being hired as software testers because of their autism, mm-hmm. not in spite of it. And just through examples and stories, there's a German arm wrestler with a genetic condition that made his right arm bigger than all of his other limbs. And that's why he became an arm wrestler. And so I use him as an example of how he used his weakness, obviously, as a strength by putting himself in the right situation. So mm-hmm. it's really not so much proving it through argument as it is proving it through example.
Right.
And when you're looking at a real life story of something that makes it true, it's a hard thing to argue with. You know, mm-hmm. it's one thing to say, Dave, I don't know if I agree that weaknesses are also strengths. It's a hard thing to say that a story of someone's weakness and a strength, what, that it isn't true or that I made it up. It's hard to argue with the reality of an example in the story.
And that keyword story is You know, that's the factor. I mean, I bring it all down to language. It's how you focus on the language and how you present things. And telling people stories gives them a hook. It allows them to have something that says, okay, I can relate to this because I've already gone through this in my life. And this story grabs onto that hook memory. Yeah. And it's a really neat thing to do, because if you can relate things through stories to people, they get it a lot easier. I mean, I tell people, you know, get rid of the mission vision statements. Nobody remembers those six words. I mean, it really is. But if you can tell people a story and give them something to relate to and use language that's powerful and it's relatable, people will engage with it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think it's not only it helps people get it better, but it helps people sort of believe it, right? It helps people believe it. It proves it, and it also makes it clearer than just standing up there and giving statements or putting up bullet points or things like that.
Right. Right. So, you know, let's get into, you know, certain things. I mean, you just wrote another book. You know, just wrote another book with Stan Phelps, who was actually on the show late last year. Right. And, you know, the book is called what, Pink Goldfish?
Yep, Pink Goldfish.
Okay. So tell me about how, you know, how that came about. Because, you know, Stan's the goldfish guy.
Right.
You know, Stan is the goldfish guy. He's written a series of books. But this seems, you know, this collaboration seems absolutely perfect for the two of you guys. Yeah. So I'd love to know how it came about. Tell me a little bit about the book and how the collaboration came about and where you guys are going with that.
So Stan is the goldfish guy. So we wrote Pink Goldfish, and the subtitle is Defy Ordinary, Exploit Imperfection and Captivate Your Customers. And basically it's taking the freak factor and applying it to marketing your business, promoting your business. And so another way to think about it is a simple way from what we just talked about. It's just the freak factor applied to marketing, right? The freak factor for marketing. And so what we did was we looked for stories. We collected, you know, over 200 stories and examples of companies that flaunt their weaknesses. Flaunt means to parade without shame. Companies that amplified what other people would say, hey, that's wrong, or that doesn't work, or that's the opposite of the way we measure success. And then we categorized those companies into different sort of ways to describe the way that they flaunted that weakness, different ways that they exploited that imperfection, and put together a book. And so the way that came together is Stan and I are both speakers. Stan and I work in the same area in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Sure.
We've been friends for a few years. We trade speeches and clients and things like that back and forth, try to help each other out. And he's writing, like you said, that whole series of goldfish books. And the freak factor was interesting enough to him to say, hey, let's write a book about that together. And we have to do something, obviously, that I haven't already done. So let's apply it to marketing, because that's sort of Stan's area. So one of my favorites from the book, one of the favorite categories, is called antagonizing. So most people talk about satisfying your customers and exceeding their expectations and trying to make people happy and doing focus groups and trying to discover what they like. And antagonizing is not that, right? Antagonizing is making people mad, frustrating people, deliberately, sort of purposefully trying to make people upset.
Right.
And my favorite example of that is called Alamo Drafthouse. And they just came to Raleigh, actually, but they started in Austin, Texas. And they show movies, and they have a very strict set of rules. No talking, no cell phone use, no texting, no coming late.
Right.
You come late, you're just not allowed in.
Perfect.
And they tell you that they're going to kick you out. No kids.
Yeah.
And if you're 15 to 18, you can apply to be allowed to come in, only once you're 15 and only after you, like, basically take a class. Like, imagine that, having to be certified to go to the movies, right?
I love it.
So they take this really seriously, and obviously just that in and of itself turns people off. But the example that we used in the book is this woman came to the event, came to the movie, and she started texting and talking and doing these different things, and she got kicked out.
Yeah.
And she called up and she just left this epic voicemail, obviously full of cursing and anger. She sounded a little bit drunk. And instead of them saying, okay, we're going to try to win this woman back, or make this woman happy, or we're going to give her some free vouchers, they actually turned it into a YouTube video as their public service announcement, and they show it at the beginning of the movies, right?
They love it.
They're like, we're serious about this. This woman hates us, and we want her to hate us, because if you're like this woman, don't come to our theater.
Exactly.
And we hope she never comes back, and we don't like people like that, and we don't want to make people like that happy.
Yeah.
So this thing that they did that made one person very, very unhappy makes a lot of other people very, very happy. And if they didn't enforce the rules, they wouldn't be making everyone happy. They would just be making different people unhappy while they made the other people who want to text and want to talk and want to come back. So that's one of my favorite examples from the book. And that's sort of what we're talking about. It seems sort of ridiculous to say, build on your weaknesses, do things wrong on purpose.
Yeah.
It's really about changing your industry's definition of what success looks like.
Exactly.
Right. And so when everybody has the same definition of success, everybody starts to behave the same way.
Yeah.
If fuel mileage is the way and affordability is the way that you measure the value of a car, then everybody starts trying to make cars that have good gas mileage and that last for a very long time.
And they all look the same.
Right. But other people want a car that they don't care how much gas it uses, and they want it to go really fast, and they don't even care if it's that reliable. They want it to look great.
Yeah. Or somebody wants the Ford F-350, you know, dual cumming diesel. They don't care.
Right.
You know, they want the big ass truck.
Right. And then somebody else doesn't want a car at all, and they want a ride sharing service. And somebody else. So it's redefining sort of in your industry. We homogenize. The point of the book is that we tend to homogenize in business, because we do things like benchmarking, right? Where we say we model our businesses after what successful businesses do. So that's another one of our favorites is opposing, which is probably what I'm going to write a whole book about next.
Nice.
But opposing is just simply doing the opposite of what everybody else does. And, and the easiest to understand example of that is eHarmony is a online dating service. They sell that they have more marriages than any other online dating service. So they help you find the one forever. And they have Neil Clark Warren, and he's a doctor, and they have algorithms, and you have to fill out pages and pages of information. And that take you hours and hours because they want to help you find the perfect match for you, right?
Right. It's
so
not
if someone's
just like
starting a business. Right. If somebody's trying to start a business in the online dating space, and they look at that, it seems like you have to have better algorithms, you have to have more doctors, you have to have better science, you have to create better matches, and you have to have data that proves more marriages and then you'll win.
Right.
But as you already alluded to, the opposite of that is for Tinder, they're not trying to help you find the one forever. They're just trying to help you find anyone right now.
That's right.
And probably not for very long. And there's no matching. The company doesn't match. Science doesn't match. You do. And all you do is pick whether you like the person's picture or you don't. And they don't have to enter all this information. They just put in a picture and you decide based on the most superficial sort of information. And so that's an example of with opposing. It's not what we oftentimes do with a new thing or something that's succeeding is we compare it to the old thing and forget that the old thing is also succeeding. eHarmony is doing very, very well.
So is Tinder.
Tinder is doing very, very well, and they're doing the opposite thing, right? They have different definitions of success, and they do things in a complete opposite way. So one of our strategies for creating your own pink goldfish is simply to look at what everybody else does and just simply do the opposite, which, again, when you do that, is going to create a lot of resistance. It's going to be hard for you to imagine because it's the opposite of benchmarking. Why would you do the opposite of what a successful company is doing? And so it's simple in sort of the way that it works, but it's hard to pull off because of sort of the courage that it takes to do things differently than really everybody else does. And not just a little bit differently doing, I mean, that's the opposite, doing it completely differently than anybody else does it.
Well, it's that dichotomy that makes it interesting.
Right. Right.
That, I mean, another one that you guys have in the book is the Elbow Room, which is absolutely one of my favorite restaurants here. I mean, I love Ed DeBevick's in Chicago as well, but, you know, of that same ilk of, you know, it's a restaurant based on, you know, getting abused. You walk there and they say, sit your ass down, get your own coffee. You know,
right. 50 Shades of Gray for restaurants, right?
Absolutely.
It's a little bit of abuse.
Yeah. If you can't walk into this restaurant and be able to give it as well as you get it, get out.
Don't go. Right. Yeah,
just don't go. It's not for you. It is a small little restaurant. They might have, you know, 25 tables and, you know, they do an incredible business and it's a loyal following and people come there because they know it's not going to be your average restaurant fare.
Right.
Food good? Absolutely. But you're not there for the food. You're right. There for the ambiance. You're there for, you know, right. You're there to get a view.
The ambiance.
Laugh.
Right. Right.
So it's a lot of fun. So yeah. I mean, I love what you guys have done with this. I love the fact that, because you're right. I mean, it's sitting there going, if everybody's going right, why aren't you going left? If right. if your personality allows you to go left, go left. Don't right. follow right. the herd. Don't follow the crowd. You know, go with your gut reaction and do something that is, it's different, it's unique, it's special, it's, you know, it might be a little edgy, but right. what it does is it lets people say, oh, that's different. Maybe I should.
Well, look. And that's again, yeah. And that's again where examples and stories come in. Cause if Stan and I just wrote the book saying you should do this, you should try this, do yeah. the opposite, make people unhappy, on the face of it, those sound like ridiculous suggestions.
Exactly.
And it goes against most of what we hear about how to be successful. So it's really the examples of, and if that sounds stupid, here's a company that does it and succeeds.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds dumb and that sounds ridiculous. Here's a company that does it and succeeds.
Yeah.
And so it's those examples that sort of prove it, that you can't say, well, I don't know if that's true. It's like, well, no, it is true. It's just a matter of how you can use it in a way that you said fits with your personality or fits with your style. Or, you know, if you're a really nice person, you probably don't want to open up a restaurant that's abusive towards people. But if you're Absolutely. A cynical person who likes to rib people and tease people and you enjoy hanging around people who do, and that's your style and you like being around those kind of people, then that's probably the kind of people that open up that kind of place.
Exactly.
But some people don't because they think no one would want that. You got to have kind and empathic service, and you yeah. have to wait on people hand and foot and make them happy and be nice. And you're not like that. So you think, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah. So that's a great message. I mean, and I come back to this is your day job. Your day right. job is you're lucky enough to be able to talk about this all day, every day. You know, right. it's unique. It's different. It's, you know, what you're doing is you're not getting up in the morning, you know, shaving, putting on your suit and tie and heading out to be a banker. But there's nothing wrong right. with that. You know, no. the world needs bankers. The world needs accountants. The world needs lawyers. Not so many, but, you know, the world needs lawyers. But, you know, we need storytellers. We need people that can make us go, huh, okay, that's different. That's
right.
It's a different way of looking at things. And I think that's the value of a really good storyteller. A really good storyteller makes you think of things a little differently than you did when you walked in the room.
Right, right.
And you may not agree, and you may not, you know, it may not speak to you immediately. It may speak to you in 5 years from now. But if you remember right. the story,
right.
the lesson will stay with you.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of it too, like remembering the story. So, I mean, Southwest Airlines is a fantastic example of yeah. a company that does the opposite in almost every way. The problem is that story's been told so many times that even though it's a good story, it's too common for us to put in the book, right? It was Absolutely. Like we wanted stories that got people's attention. The first story in the book is a company called Dirty Rotten Flowers, so that when you hate somebody and you don't want to do something nice for them, you want to do something nasty to them, you sell them wilting, smelly, rotten flowers.
Perfect.
It's the opposite of, you know, 1-800-Flowers.
Yeah.
Nobody looks at that and goes, oh yeah, of course, I've heard that 1,000 times, right? So that was one of the things that we were looking for in the book, is part of different and unusual is it's memorable because it's not so common, right? It's not Sure. so common. And so even when there are great stories of differentiation, we tried to not go with the easy ones. We tried not to go with the most common ones. We tried to, because I think as soon as most people see Southwest these days, they go, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, Southwest right. Airlines, whatever. But it misses the point that they're one of the most successful airlines, and people sure. aren't learning those lessons and really applying those lessons as well as they could. They might, go low fare or whatever, but they don't do all the things that Southwest does. They don't put the whole package together. And again, you don't necessarily need to copy, but that's one of the reasons we kind of took a different approach. We wanted to pick more obscure, more unusual, and we have some bigger ones in there as well, mm-hmm. but they're not ones that people have heard 1,000 times. And so we kind of started with the more unusual ones, and then if you had people reading the book or thinking, you know, I don't know, I haven't heard of some of these examples before. I haven't been to Elbow Room Cafe. I don't know. It's not as successful as McDonald's, right?
Right.
We put in some of the bigger name companies that have some examples of that sort of differentiation, usually, of course, especially early on, that they did some things that were really unusual to sort of show people this does work on a large scale. You can make money doing this. This is a profitable strategy, but we also wanted things that got people's attention, were memorable enough for people to share. Hey, have you heard the story of Elbow Room Cafe? Have you heard of Alamo Draft House? You got to watch this YouTube video. It's hysterical to listen to this lady cursing them out and to see how they use that to their advantage.
And, you know, and that's it. It's being able to have the proof of concept, both on the small side and the large side, because you're right. If all you did was, you know, do these little, you know, mom and pop operations that were, you know, in, you know, a completely different part of the country than, you know, what most people live in, people go, oh yeah, those are just one-offs. You know, it doesn't really mean anything. But when you can bring and say, yeah, here's all these little one-offs, but here's a couple big ones, and this is how they took this and scaled it.
Right.
All of a sudden it gives it the, you know, the credence and the credibility that it deserves.
But that was also one of our arguments, though, is that that was one of the examples is what we called withholding, where you stay small on purpose. Yeah. You don't want to get big. You don't want to scale. You don't give people all the locations that they want. You don't give people all the services and the products that they want. You deliberately keep it small. You deliberately keep it focused. You deliberately keep it just that one 25-seat restaurant. You don't try to go regional. You don't try to go national. You don't expand your menu. You don't add breakfast. You don't, whatever it happens to be, because we wanted to... Yeah, we wanted to remind people of that too. Scale is one decision, but it isn't the only method of success. I mean, I used my own business as an example. We were joking before we started that, you know, it's 8:30 where you started for you. It's 11:30 for me, but we both just had breakfast, right? Yeah. I'm not waking up and going into the office and answering a bunch of emails and managing my company's 401k plan for my employees and looking what our health insurance is going to be for next year and answering people's email about their commission check and responding to different customer inquiries. I have a business where it's just me, where I've outsourced basically every aspect of the business except for the speaking. And I don't want it to get bigger in the sense of having employees. I don't want it to get bigger in the sense 100% of having all these other things. I like to speak, and I don't want to have someone else do the speaking for me. I don't want to create a speaking business. I want to be the speaker. Mm-hmm. And so I think it needs to be okay for people to not have to apologize for keeping it small on purpose. We pulled some examples from the book Small Giants by Bo Burlingham and talked about companies who deliberately kept it small. It wasn't, you couldn't grow. No one wanted. No, it was, you could have gotten bigger and you deliberately didn't because that wasn't your strategy. That wasn't where you're going. And that's okay. Yeah. It's okay to stay small on purpose. It's okay not to scale.
And I agree with that because I'm the same way. You know, I was a big corporation 10, 12 years ago. Got rid of it. Got rid of my partner. Got rid of 30 staff. Got rid of everything. I'm much happier now.
Right.
You know, I run the business the way I want to run it. I treat my clients the way I want to treat them. And I'm not worried about, you said, all those wonderful things that come with growing a scale. And sometimes getting bigger, you lose that. You lose what made you special by getting bigger. Yeah. And people have to think about that. It says, what are the things that make them unique? What makes them different? And you know what? I'm okay being a small business because I enjoy this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes, I read it before I started my business. It was from a book called Free Agent Nation by Dan Pink.
Yep.
And he said, bigger isn't better. Better is better. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of what we're trying to give people. But again, if people measure business success by size, by total revenue. Even that's one that makes me laugh. I mean, I don't care how much even you as a person made last year.
Yeah.
But I certainly don't care how much your business made. You can have a business that has tons of revenue and you might not even make any money at all. So somebody goes, I have a $20 million business. Well, how much money did you make though? Because it really doesn't matter.
What went in the back pocket?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And then even with that, I think we need to go back to when we were kids and we had a job and got paid by the hour. Don't tell me what you made last year. Tell me what you made per hour.
Right.
Because what I can guarantee you is with the life that I've been able to create for myself, the dollars per hour stacks up against even Fortune 500 CEOs.
Sure.
Because, yeah, they're making more money than me, but they're also putting in 90 100-hour weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm putting in 90 100-hour quarters. You know,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, so I think we need a different mindset to say it isn't just about the big number. It isn't just about the annual number. It isn't just about even the profit number. It's about the take-home number, and even that, it's not just about the take-home number. It's about what did you have to, how many hours did you have to work to get that return? And you can have a good lifestyle without doing some of the stuff that makes things bigger and bigger and bigger, which increases your inputs, even though it also increases your outputs, right? So that's sort of where I'm coming from. And I think in the book, we're trying to give people courage. Be big if you want. Stan wants to make his business bigger. Stan is trying to hire people.
Yep.
Stan is kind of trying to create a goldfish empire. And that's great.
Absolutely.
I'm not. We can still work together, right? But we have different goals, right?
Yeah.
We have different goals. And both of those, Stan can do a good job doing that and have a good life doing that. I can have a good life doing what I'm doing, even though we're doing the opposite. And that's what we're trying to teach people in the book. You can be doing things completely differently and have that still be effective than the quote unquote successful companies or the companies that everybody knows about.
Well, it's being successful on your terms.
Right.
That's a key thing. So let me ask you one last thing. I'm going to let you go because, you know, this is an incredible conversation. When you walk out of a room or you get off your stage and you walk away, what is the one thing you want to leave people with when you're not there?
Yeah, well, that's easy because it's the last thing that I say in all my speeches. There's a quote by E.E. Cummings who says, "We do not believe in ourselves until someone reveals that deep inside of us something is valuable, worth listening to, worthy of our trust, sacred to our touch."
Wow.
And what I tell people is that I do my speeches in an effort to show people that deep inside of them something is valuable. And usually that thing is deep inside of them and it's valuable. And it's usually the thing they've been told is the most worthless thing about them, right?
Right.
And not only is it not worthless, it's worth listening to. It's worthy of our trust. It's sacred to our touch. And what I hope people do is they hear that for themselves and they see that for themselves. But then when they leave, it also changes the way they see their kids,
mm-hmm.
changes the way they see their employees. It changes the way they see their spouse or their partner. And then they become a person who reveals to other people that deep inside of them, something is valuable, worth listening to, worthy of our trust, sacred to our touch.
Nice.
And I think when people see that, because even when I do the, I did a talk for the Richmond chapter of the American Marketing Association. And I just basically did, it was like early pink goldfish. I just did the marketing talk. I just used the marketing examples. I just used the business examples.
Yeah.
And the first question in Q&A was, this applies to kids too, right? This applies to parenting too, right? You could totally use this idea of weakness and strength in your family, couldn't you? And so even when I'm trying to give people the career application, the business application, the profit application, what people really care about is those relationships. They really care about those things that give life meaning. And so I think that's the core of what I'm trying to do, is show people that there's something hidden in them that oftentimes they've missed. And not only have they missed, that people have told them is awful, and that it isn't awful, it's fantastic. And then once they see that, that's not just a small change, it's a massive change that affects every single part of their life once they start making those applications.
That's incredible. I mean, it's getting people to believe in themselves and understand their true value.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a phenomenal thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dave, thank you very much for being on the show. Hang on one second. I'm just going to say goodbye to everybody and
Perfect.
I'll be right back.
All right. Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed this episode with Dave. You know, he was great. He tells great stories. And you know what? I think that he gave us some really good lessons. Now, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, what do? You know, with your brand marketing, I consult, I provide workshops, and I speak on brand message, market vision, and value. It's about your story. It's how do we tell a story that's unique, it's different, and people want to engage with. And that's what this show is about. So come and join us. Come talk to me. I'd love to work with you. But every Wednesday at 10 o'clock Pacific, this is the YourLivingBrand.live show.